All right, everybody, good afternoon. This is the Thursday, May 18th, 2017 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Susan, could you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Our usual notice, the purpose of council meetings is to do the city's business, including hearing from the community on issues of concern. In order for to, you'd think after the number of times I've read this, in order for us to hear from everyone and to give due consideration to matters before the council, we must all endeavor to preserve the order and decorum of these meetings. To make sure that the process is clear for everyone, I want to review some of the basic guidelines, which I hope will help everyone to feel comfortable, welcome, respected, and safe at the meeting, as well as to help us to ensure that decorum is maintained. There are two opportunities for public today there is one opportunity for public presentation. People may sign up for public testimony on the first readings of reports, resolutions, and ordinances. If you sign up, your testimony must address the matter being considered at the time. Please state your name for the record. We don't need your address. If you're a lobbyist, please say so. If you're here representing an organization, it's helpful to know that, too. Typically, people get 3 minutes to testify unless we're way behind schedule, in which case we might shorten it. When you have 30 seconds left, the yellow light lights up. There's one buzz. When it is red, there will be four beeps. If you're more than a minute over, your seat will start to get very, very warm. That's a new addition. Just kidding. Conduct that disrupts the meeting. For example, shouting or interrupting other people's testimony or interrupting during council deliberations will not be allowed. Personal attacks and insults levied against city and council staff, many of whom are required to testify as a condition of their employment, will not be tolerated. People who disrupt the meeting face ejection from the meeting. If there is a disruption, I'll issue a warning that if any further disruption occurs, anyone who is doing the disrupting will be asked to leave the meeting. If you're asked to leave the meeting and you don't leave the meeting, you are subject to arrest for trespassing, but we hope that doesn't happen. If you'd like to show your support for something, a simple thumbs up is great. If you don't like something you're hearing, it's okay to have a simple thumbs down. Please no verbal shouting. With that, Susan, could you read the first item for us, please?
Item 519, revised residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges, effective July 1, 2017.
The first of our utility rate ordinances today is for residential solid waste rates, something we're all excited to hear about right after lunch. Portland is committed to being a leader in the recycling and composting field, and our residents are recycling and composting over 60% of their waste, which is close to twice the national average, something that all Portlanders should be very proud of. Recycling and composting are cost-effective compared with landfilling. The proposed rates in front of us today include an increase of 10 cents per month, which is well below inflation, and it is the first rate increase in over 5 years. Portland residents are continuing to recycle and compost, and it's helping keep our rates low. Today, Michael Armstrong and Bruce Walker with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability are here to share their findings from this year's solid waste rate review and the proposed rates. Gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Michael Armstrong. I manage the sustainability programs for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. With me is Bruce Walker, who manages our solid waste programs. And also with us, if you really stump us on questions, Arianne Sperry has done a lot of the analysis of the proposed rates this year. She's here as well.
Great. Thank you.
So as you laid out, Mayor, we're here to propose residential rates. And so these address garbage, recycling, and composting, curbside collection, which is provided in Portland by about a dozen franchise companies to single-family houses, duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes. Just to differentiate, the commercial system, which includes businesses as well as multifamily properties with five or more units, those services are provided by haulers that the city permits, and we set general standards for collection, but we do not set rates. So we're not talking about commercial this afternoon, just residential. Each year, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability conducts a thorough analysis of the costs that are involved with providing the curbside service, Part of that is to contract with an independent CPA who goes through Hauler financial records. As the mayor noted, this year the result of that analysis is a proposed increase in the rates of 10 cents per month. And most of that's due to higher fuel costs and sort of a slight increase in labor cost as well. One important exception here is that on the west side, most of the west side of Portland, the parts of the city that have lower street connectivity, larger lots, narrow, windy roads, we have what we call a terrain fee that differentiates between the additional costs of serving west side residences from on the east side, where the costs are lower. And, you know, haulers continue to achieve some pretty impressive collection efficiencies throughout most of the city. They're not seeing quite the same efficiencies in those kind of hillier, windier parts of the city. And so the proposed rate increase is 10 cents for all customers, but there's an additional 20-cent increase for the about approximately 15% of customers who live in the west side areas that are covered by this terrain fee. So we're trying to to recognize the different costs of services in the different parts of the city. So this rate review process includes anticipated inflation to then adds that to the hauler's actual costs over the last calendar year. And let me get here to my rates. So the table here in front of you shows the proposed rates for next year, starting July 1, the current rates, the difference, 10 cents in each case, other than these west side routes that include the terrain fee, and then just have a sense of, you know, how many customers in which service level, you see the percent of customers there. So the proposal is a 10 cent increase for each of the service levels. And then to give a sense of the historical trend, as the mayor mentioned, this would be the first rate increase in 5 years, and that dates back to the time we made the changes, added the ability to put food scraps in with your yard debris in the green cart, and switch to weekly collection of yard debris, every other week collection of garbage. And so the trend here is quite remarkable, really. This would be the first rate increase, and even this year alone, it's less than the rate of inflation. That's a testament both to the efficiencies haulers are finding as they continue to continuously improve their service delivery. It's also a testament to the really great composting participation that we see in households, recycling as well. And so together, those things coupled with this system approach that lets us capture those efficiencies, the good practices by households, we are able to, for at least the last 5 years for sure, keep rates well below the rate of inflation. So that's the proposal for this coming year. I think we're happy to answer questions now, perhaps take testimony and come back.
Any Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you. I just have a question about the terrain map that's figure yes. 6 on page 5. Is that the same as the excess distance charge, or where's the what's the terrain charge?
The Commissioner Fritz, the terrain fee is currently it an additional $4 per month, and that it's encompassed on, or outlined on the map you see of where that is put in place on the west side. So it's not the entire west side of Portland. You ask about the excess distance. That's an additional charge that's applied when haulers go to further away from the curbside to offer off-curb service to certain customers.
I'm just not seeing the $4 charge listed anywhere. I see the map.
Are you asking, so the $4 charge is not based on geography?
No, I'm just in the Exhibit A. I don't see that listed anywhere.
So it's on, let's see.
Here's the excess distance. This is the terrain differential?
Yeah, the terrain differential.
So is the terrain differential?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I see that. No, thank you very much.
Okay.
At the very end of the exhibit, is that what you're referring to? On page figure 6, page 3?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Now,
that's the terrain charge
thank
I was
you.
Referring to.
Got it. Thanks.
Questions?
Any other questions for the time being? Great. Is that the entirety of your report?
It is.
Where is the massive publicity about how we're only raising it 10 cents in 6 years?
We will have
I'm still
the
trying to figure press out why release two ready hours to go. Was requested.
We're not done yet.
You're not done yet.
All right, I have a question.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one who read the agenda the way the mayor did.
The 2 hours is for all
the league. The mayor and I both read it that way, just for the record.
Believe me, I wasn't complaining. I was like,
I was plenty out of here.
Okay, Commissioner Udaly's savings.
If anyone will allow me to ask a question here.
Go for it.
Could you explain to us how the increase in compost and recycling has helped keep rates down, because obviously it's still being hauled away, and I could venture a guess, but I'd rather hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so you're right. It still needs to be collected, mm-hmm. picked up, taken to the transfer station, but it is then taken and turned into a valuable material. And so the per ton fee, when you take materials to the transfer station, the per ton fee for garbage is $95 a ton.
Correct.
In the ballpark of $95 a ton, the per ton fee for compostable materials is?
68.
Thank you.
Okay.
And so that differential is what's helping keep rates lower. Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Very good. Any further questions for right now? Any public testimony on this particular item, 519?
We have one testifier, Beth Vargas Duncan. Please come
on up. Thank you, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and I'm glad the city's willing to reserve their extra hour and 50 minutes for me. No, just kidding. I'm Beth Vargas Duncan with Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and with me is the previous regional director with Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. Well, I may be jumping the gun there. He's retiring at the end of June, and I'll be taking his position. That's Dave White.
Great, thank you.
So as ORA's regional staff, we represent the Portland Haulers Association, whose members provide regional solid waste and recycling collection services within the city of Portland. So the proposed rates, as you just saw presented by city staff, are part of the city's robust process and thorough annual rate review. So we work together with city staff and rate consultants. The haulers also hire a rate consultant to review very detailed cost information, and we have a very collaborative process where we exchange information and discuss our questions and work things out. So speeding to the end here, we believe, having come toward the end of the rate review process, we believe it's been a very fair process that will result in reasonable rates for the haulers, the citizens of Portland, and our customers. The haulers have worked together to provide efficient, modern, and clean services. And as you heard, over the past several years, the rates have remained flat or have actually decreased. So it's fair to say that perhaps a little increase, just under the 1%, as you heard, is appropriate at this time. So one other item that we'd like to address briefly is it's come to our attention that while there are a number of customers that still have cart cans, an actual garbage can that you pick up and carry down your driveway to place at the curb instead of a roll cart, and the number of customers, it's about 12% of the customers within the city, residential customers within the city of Portland, still have cans. That's been trending downward. But the Portland Haulers Association would be interested in perhaps accelerating that a little bit, and we've engaged conversations with city staff to propose a planful transition so that we could have all customers enjoying a much more modern and efficient system so that it would be fully automated. Customers wouldn't be lugging their cans down to the end of their driveway anymore. They could just roll the cart down. So we are talking to them and just kind of planning to have a transition next summer. We had proposed a date of July 1, 2018, but we may have to slide that a little bit, realizing it will take a little bit of time, but we are hoping to do it perhaps next summer.
Great.
And I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have just a comment, Mayor. So you represent the haulers, which means the companies that then put the trucks on the street to pick up the garbage.
Within the city of Portland. Most all of the haulers.
Yeah. So I had a meeting and first of all, I think the system works great, and we're, you know, we have value the relationships of the haulers. I now live in one of the densest neighborhoods in the city, which is Goose Hollow. And I've noticed more than one company apparently allows their drivers to collect the trash on steep incline hills by just shifting from either side of the road to pick up the trash. I checked with Leah Treat, who is the PBOT director, and she said that is a significant violation of the law. And so I'm going to be following up with her because I got the names of the companies and some license plates. But I would like to have a conversation with you as an association because I know that's not standard operating procedure. And it does create enormous hazards to the public, not the least of which is people coming up the hill are coming up against a truck, driving the wrong way on the truck, and the vehicles are switching lanes illegally. And I think it may be based on some training issues or just lack of awareness of the law. But, again, we appreciate the relationship. But there has been some, now that I'm living in Goose Hollow and I walk to work, I've observed some things which I think as an industry you'll want to get in front of. And I'll be I have spoken to PBOT. They'll be talking to you. And I'm hoping we can resolve these issues.
Commissioner Fish, I appreciate you raising that issue. It is not one of which we as an association are aware, but we can definitely look into it and verify that it's one of our members and do what we can to resolve that situation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz?
Well, first I want to thank you for the very collaborative and productive relationship that we have with the Haulers Association. It's one of, I think, a good example. In fact, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Udaly have been doing a lot of tours as they start their new jobs. My tour of the recycling facility remains in my mind one of the most interesting I've done. So thank the Haulers Association for putting that on for me and would definitely encourage you to do that. I changed from my 32-gallon can to the 35-gallon roll cart when I looked at the numbers and they were the same price. Well, of course, I'm going to want the nice one that I can roll rather than the metal one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much we've done in terms of the recycler, the mailer that goes to people, but I would think just putting a banner on that saying that, you know, you can get 3 extra gallons for free and also have a very nice roll cart. Hopefully we could start to attack some of those 12% who didn't get the message previously. Because it's also better for the haulers, right? Because they don't have to be picking it up. They can put it on the stand and it lifts it for them.
Commissioner Fritz, I appreciate that. And thank you very much. I, too, enjoy those tours. So I appreciate your recognition of the haulers in hosting those. And just with all due respect, a slight correction. You may not have been charged the full rate in the transition, but there is an actual rate that the haulers are able to charge. It's a differential of about 65 cents a month, I believe, between a 35-gallon can and, I mean, the 32-gallon can and the 35-gallon cart.
Well, in the table that we've got on figure six, it says on page one, it says the same, 2170.
Oh, for every 4 weeks.
Right.
Correct. But so we're both right. So I believe it's when you have every other week pickup that there's a differential. I'm relatively new, so I'd have to double check. But
yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? There's no for every other week pickup. There isn't even the option of the 35-gallon roll cart.
And likely that is the situation because we are not taking new subscribers for cans.
Right.
The city has been working with the haulers to try to encourage folks to move and to keep that trend downward to move toward carts.
Yeah.
So, I appreciate you pointing out that it's the same on the month or every 4 week service.
And we take great pride in sometimes not even filling it once a month.
Right.
Because
right.
of the great service you're doing with the composting and the recycling and everything. I will say that one of the things I was most disturbed about when I did the tour was the number of people who put dirty diapers in their recycling bin. On what planet would that be acceptable behavior?
Right. So. We keep working on education.
Yeah. Thank you.
I just wanted to take this opportunity to really commend our staff, Michael Armstrong and Bruce Walker and David White, for doing a great job representing Portland haulers over the year. I think our recycling program is really first notch, top notch, and I really I'm proud of what we do here. And I know it's been a great collaboration over the years with the haulers to make our recycling program so exceptional. So thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just put my 2 cents in, too. I think the results are extraordinary, and the reduction to the waste stream have been significant. And once again, the efforts of my colleagues who've been here for a while, your efforts, the efforts in the community, citizens who've taken it upon themselves to aggressively embrace this strategy have done a great thing, a great service for the community, for the planet, for the environment. And, hey, folks, it's good business, too. So thank you, and thank you for the haulers that you represent.
Thank you very much.
Continue to
appreciate
have a long
the kind
and productive
words.
Relationship. Any further discussion on this? Seeing none, this is a non-emergency first reading of an ordinance. It moves to second reading. We'll read the next two items together, please.
520. Authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2017 to June 30, 2018, and fix an effective date. And 521, revise sewer and stormwater rates, charges, and fees in accordance with the fiscal year 2017-2018 sewer user rate study.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and colleagues, today I have the honor of presenting to you the proposed rate increases for the Portland Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services. For the, this says fourth consecutive year. I think it's fifth consecutive year. I have directed our two utilities to present a rate increase that reflects good value at a fair price, and the bureaus have once again delivered. They have proposed a combined rate increase of just under 4.2%. And to put it into context, that's roughly $4 per month for the typical customer. And if you look over the last 4 years, we've gone from a combined rate increase of about 5%, and we're heading down to about 4%, which means significant savings for our ratepayers. And it reflects our ongoing commitment to providing good value to our ratepayers and to investing in basic services like replacing old pipes and preparing for the big one. A little more background on our proposal. The typical monthly bill is about $108. About a third of everyone's bill is for water, and two-thirds is for sewer stormwater. Again, about a third of your bill is for water, and the rest is for sewer stormwater. How do we stack up locally and nationally? Well, if you lived in Lake Oswego and Tigard, you'd pay more for your water. In a national customer survey, survey released yesterday by J.D. Power, the Portland Water Bureau ranked 9th out of 24 West Coast utilities surveyed and 8th nationwide for water quality. On the sewer stormwater side, the typical customer will pay just over $70 a month. And as Dan knows, a big part of this is paying off the debt on the big pipe. Now, no one likes to pay more for a basic service, including me, but I am proud that we have been able to stabilize rates these last 5 years. I'm also proud that our public utilities continue to invest in improving our system while exercising discipline with ratepayer dollars. For example, this year, the general fund will continue to pick up the cost of preservation work at Mount Tabor and the water fountain operations. Thank you, Mayor, for your partnership on that, as reflected in your budget. There are a number of people that I want to thank today ahead of the presentation. First, Janice Thompson from the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon for her ongoing partnership with Portland's public utilities, and she's here today and we'll hear from her. Second, the Portland Utility Board for their thoughtful consideration of both bureau budgets, particularly PUB co-chair Alan Warman and his future co-chair Colleen Johnson, whose appointment will come to council in the next few weeks. Alan is here today to testify. Shannon Fairchild from the City Budget Office, who provided thorough and independent analysis for both utilities. Next, I want to thank the two Mikes, Mike Stewart and Mike Jordan, and their finance directors, Cecilia Hewn and Jonas Beery, and their dedicated teams at the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services. These professionals serve Portlanders 24/7, 365 days a year, and I'm extremely proud to lead them. Finally, I want to acknowledge my two staff liaisons, Jamie Dumphy and Leon Frost. Now I'd like to invite Mike Stewart and Cecilia to kick things off with the Water Bureau's proposed rate. Mike?
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. I'm joined at the table by Cecilia on my left, our finance director, and on the right by Mike Jordan and Jonas Beery. And Jonas has undertaken the task of pushing the infamous button to keep the slides moving. What the Water Bureau is going to talk about today is our proposed water rates for fiscal year 2017. I'm going to begin the conversation, and then I'm going to turn it over to the real expert, Cecilia. I'll get to say all the easy things. First, on your slideshow, you'll see two big fat bars. On the left side is resources that we need, bond proceeds, monthly charges, capital, and so on. And on the right, the green bars is what our requirements are. And in the accounting world, they have to match, and they do. Two of the small bars bear some mentioning. Capital revenues, $10.7 million. That's the skinny little bar near the top. What that means is we are paid by developers and others for mains and services. That's where our SDCs are charged. And capital interagencies with other bureaus. Sometimes bureaus do things and we have to build things for them to work around it, and they pay us for it. The second one that I would mention on the revenue side is at the skinny line at the bottom, other expenditures of $17 million. That includes the utility license fee, general fund overhead, pension obligation bonds, the costs of our bonds, and we have to round things up. It's easier to round than it is to chase the six digits worth of numbers out there. The total result here is 591 FTE for the Water Bureau. On the requirement side, capital program is pretty evident what that is. It's all of our large construction projects, Washington Park, the coming Willamette River Crossing, and so on, big seismic projects. Operations and maintenance, that's pretty obvious what that is. Debt service, we borrowed money on bonds and we have to pay debt service. The little line at the bottom, other expenditures, again, utility license fee, overhead, pension bonds, and so on. The result of all of those numbers and putting our rates together is a retail rate increase for the Water Bureau of 6.7%. At the beginning of the year, last year's prediction was 8.4%. I think we do a very good job of kind of chewing this thing down. We make very conservative assumptions at the beginning of each year and end up chewing it, making it smaller. System development charges are 7.4%. The reason that is different is system development charges for the Water Bureau are backward-looking. Essentially, if you put something new on the system, you have a new customer on the system, we ask them to pay for the parts of the system that they're going to use that were built already. And when we add large capital items like Powell Butte, Kelly Butte, Washington Park, and so on, all of that gets built in, and this is a cost-of-service model. And that's what the prime driver is for the increase in SDCs. Our fixed fees and charges, it's the little rate book that you're used to seeing. We do those based on a cost of service model. We evaluate them every year. We kind of use a bell curve in that regard. It gives certainty to the developers and others who need to use those fees. And we try and make sure that over time we end up even up. And now I'll turn it over to Cecilia to explain this in more detail.
Thank you, Mike. I'm on slide four, and what we have on slide four is Water's five-year rate forecast. As you may recall from the budget work session, the Bureau utilizes a rate stabilization account to smooth retail rate increases. The Bureau established the account back in 2006, and we've been building up on the funds in that account since we had established it. The fund will be, or the account will be used as intended to smooth retail rate increases. So with the rate stabilization account, and that's the blue bar that you see, our projection is 6.7% rate increase for each of the year in the forecast. The other bar, salmon color, is what the required rate increase would need to be if we did not have a rate stabilization account. And lastly, about the forecast, it does include very conservative economic assumptions. Again, that's something that we update every year. On the next slide is, what does a 6.7% rate increase mean to our customer's bill? For the typical residential customer using 5 CCF, and that's 3,740 gallons a month, those customers will see their bills increase $2.28 a month. For the qualifying low-income residential customers with a 50% bill discount, they'll see their bill increase $1.12. Your medium-sized commercial customers are your local grocery and restaurant chains like McDonald's and Albertsons. So for a penny, our customers receive about 1.7 gallons of water from us. On the next slide, the Portland water bill represents about 6% of the typical monthly utility services that most residential customers pay a month. Water bill, as proposed at $36.11 a month, is higher than a land phone line at home and the garbage services a month. But for the qualifying low-income customer, again, at 50% bill discount, $18.05 a month, their water bill will be the lowest utility bill that they would be paying each month. On the next slide is just a comparison of our residential customer bill.
Can I just interrupt you for one moment? I didn't know that.
You didn't know?
And that's really important because I get a lot of blowback from people on water rates. And I think that slide bears a good hard look. And I
go
think
back to it.
I'll just say I don't think we do a good enough job of telling this story, and that's not necessarily your responsibility singularly. I'm getting a thumbs up. Excellent. I didn't know that. If I didn't know that, my guess is probably there are other people in the community who didn't know that either. But that's
Mayor, can I just make
slide.
A comment on that?
Fish,
I thank you very much for your comment to my team. I think it has less to do with us telling our story, and it has more to do with the story that our critics have told, which has, in effect, told the wrong story. And a couple of points towards that. The combined bill that we send out either electronically or paper copy to people in our community, most people view that as think of that as a water bill. It turns out water is just one-third of their bill. And so we probably have not done a good enough job explaining that it's a combined water, sewer, stormwater bill. And if people understood that more and understood that part of the increase in rates over time was to fund compliance with a project called Big Pipe, I think they'd have a different view about their bill. If they knew, for example, that they'd pay more in many of our suburban communities, they might have a different view. But what I've observed during the time I've had the honor of leading the Bureau is that there has been a pretty significant effort by some of our critics to tell the wrong story. And I will say even the lawsuit that was brought against the utilities criticizing some of the spending, interestingly, the primary claim in that case was the use of how we funded Superfund. Had nothing to do with water or water rates. And yet the acronym for the plaintiff's class in that case was water. So, again, there has been an effort to frame this as a water issue because, of course, here in Portland, we care deeply about our water. The truth is most of the long-term structural increases are the result of regulatory mandates that we've had to embrace, that we've gone alone, almost $2 billion of spending, and the majority of that has been absorbed by the Bureau of Environmental Services. So can we do a better job? I would like to think, Mayor, that yesterday you brought your first budget to a soft landing, and I think the community cheered, and there was not a single reporter in the room. So I don't know, how might you do a better job of getting your message out about your Bureau?
That's called a victory when there's no reporters.
So I think we have the same challenge. And I think when people are presented with the facts, they get a different view of the utilities.
Yeah, good. Thanks for the clarification. I appreciate that.
I have a question.
Commissioner Daly.
What is the qualifying criteria for the low-income program? Do you know?
It's based on the federal guidelines on medium or the
60% of medium family
medium
income.
Family
I think I'm not the expert on that, but we use a third party to decide that county.
That's a little more generous
so
than a lot of. That's more generous than a lot of needs-based.
It's really difficult to compare nationwide because the programs are so different and many utilities don't have them. But Dave Hassan, our former finance director, chaired the committee on the subject, and we think we have one of the most generous programs in the country. That's the safest thing to say. I can't say it's the most generous. It's very difficult to compare.
Mike, I've asked Commissioner Daly to assist us in the next year in thinking of ways we can extend this program to renters. And, of course, historically the challenge has been the discount follows what shows up on the meter. And so renters who don't have a meter have had a more difficult time accessing this, although as a group, there are a lot of people who would otherwise be eligible for the program, and Commissioner Udaly is going to help us hopefully resolve that issue.
It's a nationwide challenge. People have been trying to figure out how to crack the code on this thing, and in some ways we're a bill discount program, not a people discount program. It's who gets the bill, and renters don't often get the bill. So that makes it difficult to identify and figure out an auditable, trackable way to do it. But we welcome your help.
If one is at that 60% MFI or under, how do they know the program exists?
We have lots of advertising, and we're going to be doing a better job of that. One of the things we've done is expand our public outreach. We're right now in the throes of interviewing for an outreach person that hopefully will have language capability too. So we do a lot of outreach. We do outreach to the two or three organizations in the county and the city that work with low-income people and make sure they're briefed on what our programs are. And our customer service reps, they're trained out of a huge notebook, and they're trained to ask if somebody's having trouble, do you fit, do you qualify?
So, Mayor, an example is we contract with the county so that they advertise these programs to older adults that they serve. That's one example. And we work with Home Forward to make sure that folks that are eligible know about it. One of the charges I've given both the Bureau and the Pub is to think about ways of expanding this program to qualified older adults, with an eye particularly to keeping people in their homes who want to age in home, but who are finding that their suite of utility bills are becoming a burden.
So if I'm eligible, or if one is eligible for this program, for the reduced rate, is it likely that there are also other programs on this whole other list of utilities that are similar? If I'm eligible,
parts of it might be.
Gas, the internet service, cable, cell phone, electricity, are there similar programs for those?
I'm not an expert on their other programs, but I know PGE does and Northwest Natural does.
My thinking is if we can find one person who's eligible for the water rate reduction and doesn't know it, there are probably other ways they could reduce their cost of living that they're also eligible for that they also don't know about. So it's like a coordinated
effort. There's a questionnaire online on 2-in-1, right? You plug in all your info, and it tells you all the programs you might qualify for.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
We're working with our oversight bodies to think about how to expand beyond the thousands of people that now do take advantage of this program, Mayor. We want to expand that, and particularly the focus in the next year will be older adults who are eligible.
Great.
Now we have 6,500 people in the program.
Okay, so now I know why this is a two-hour presentation. Sorry, I interrupted you.
That's all right.
Thank you.
That's all right.
So on to slide 8, comparison of our residential customers' bill to others in the region. And Commissioner Fish has stated earlier that for those living in Lake Oswego and Tigard, they pay more than our Portland customers. And for those living in Gresham and within the West Slope Water District, they pay a little less. And then lastly, on the last slide, 9, is Portland's proposed system development charges for water, and we compare fairly low among the jurisdictions around us.
That's interesting.
So, Commissioner Fish, are we going to hold questions or more questions until...
Yes, the mayor would like us to do the... combined presentation, take questions, initial questions from the council, then we have invited testimony, then public testimony.
Okay, so now I'd like to turn it over to Mike Jordan from the Bureau of Environmental Services.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the record, my name is Mike Jordan. I'm the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services, here to do basically the same thing Mike just did for BES and talk just a little bit about how our rates are derived. With me today is Jonas Beery, business services manager for the Bureau, and he'll talk a little more detail as Cecilia did. So on slide 2, you passed the budget yesterday. I don't have to remind you really about what you passed for, but this just gives you a very high-level description of what the Bureau operates. So we have 99 pump stations across the city. There are two treatment plants, including the largest one in the state of Oregon. We obviously do stormwater management. I think the next bullet is perhaps one of the drivers, and I'll talk a little bit about it on a later slide, and that is the maintenance and reconstruction of the system. It's a huge issue for us, and we've talked a lot about Superfund and the city's role in Superfund, which is, of course, in transition right now with the ROD. On the next slide, our budget is constructed to maintain a current level of service with some additions, and you'll recall the decision packages that we brought forward during the budget process. They fell into these categories, and I'll just mention the last two, along with that third bullet on the previous slide regarding maintenance and reconstruction. We continue to do enhanced level of system planning and maintenance, and the last one, understanding the condition of what is a 80 to 120-year-old system is a big part of what we do. All of those things driving toward the bottom of that slide, which is how do we build a sustainable investment in the asset that can have stable financials over the long term. That's what we're trying to do. The next slide kind of gives you the big picture in the numbers. And that pie chart is divided, as you can see, intentionally. The sections of the pie that hold the green hue are related to capital. The debt service, that's past capital that we've already built. Much of that is big pipe. The current capital is the $114 million in the middle there. That's what we intend to spend in the next fiscal year. And then the $40 million is really a combination of expenditures geared towards future capital and stabilizing our rates. And so as you can see, if you count those up, it's two-thirds of our budget. 67% of the budget is geared toward capital investment in the system and maintaining it over the long term. So on the next slide, you see what all of that spending does to rates. The average single-family residential monthly sewer and stormwater bill for next year, we're proposing, will increase by $2.06 or 2.95%. Some of you will recall that last year when we were here, we made a projection about rates into the future, not just last year's rates. Our projection last year for this year was going to be 3.25. So we're down a little from the projection. We're hoping that that trend can continue. But it represents about a $2.06 increase. You can see from the graph, current bill is $69.80, and the future bill, if approved, would be $71.86. You just had a little bit of a discussion. The first bullet on this program is, or on this slide, is exactly the same program. It's a program we just talked about, and you can see where you have approximately 6,650 folks in the program. It qualifies on our side as a $31.68 reduction in that bill we just talked about for folks who qualify for that program.
Can I ask you a question? I'm sorry to keep raising questions.
Certainly.
About this. How is that rate, just in a broad sense, in a couple of sentences, how is that rate picked? Is it simply the 60% MFI cutoff, so it varies as the federal government redefines the MFI brackets?
My understanding is that's correct. That's the threshold we use for qualification.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
You bet. And then the second bullet is a different program that we use. We call the Clean River Rewards Program. It's currently authorized through June of 2019. We will bring some information about that program back to you in the next fiscal year in talking about reauthorizing the program for the future. But as you can see, there are almost 36,000 accounts on that program, and the discount is about $9.60 on an average bill. The way people qualify for that is to do things to manage stormwater on their own site. It can be multiple different techniques that they use, like disconnecting their downspouts from the stormwater system, or retaining, building a Green Street facility, or not a Green Street facility, but a retention facility on their property. Those kinds of things that they can do to get a reduction in the stormwater portion of the bill.
So what's so great about this data is Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Udaly working with you can actually back into the number of people who potentially, or the number of households that qualify for this program that aren't receiving it. If we know there's 7,300 people on the program and we know it's a 60% MFI cutoff, and we have the HUD data telling us what percentage of households in Portland are at 60% and under, we should be able to get a pretty quick cut and dirty on the number of people who should be on this program but aren't.
Mr. Mayor, you're absolutely right. As far as at kind of the macro level, being able to understand what the delta is, as Mike mentioned, there have been many folks for many years trying to figure out how to deal with the fact that we don't send a bill to the majority of the folks who are in that income bracket. And so how do we get it to them in an equitable way and with some knowledge that we're getting the money to the right place? That's the challenge.
I would say, Mike, there's probably three questions that we continue to look at. One is, who's eligible? Number two is, how do we pass the discount to that person? And particularly in the instance where they don't have a their own individual meter. And by the way, this is one of the reasons we have considered for some time changing the building code to require individually metered units in all new multifamily development, because that would solve the problem. And in addition to who's eligible and how do they receive the discount, the third question is how much do we want, how big a subsidy should we have, and what's the impact on rates? Those are the three questions that we have to grapple with.
Commissioner Udaly,
Joan. Oh, I don't want to keep interrupting.
So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to turn it over to Jonas, who's going to talk about some of the details on the rates.
Great. Thank you. And one just minor correction, because it came up in discussion. The slide that's shown on the screen says 7,300 customers. That's actually not been updated. The correct number is 6,650. So since it came up, I just wanted to correct that for the record. It's actually a slightly lower, and we failed to get that updated here. So apologies for that. So Mike talked a minute ago about stable financial condition. He mentioned last year at this time we came forward with a rate increase of 325. And I want to point out that last year we also set a bar that rate increase, when we talk about a rate increase, we're talking about every year of the forecast. So as you can see now, we're at 295, and 295 for the entire forecasts. And I would also add that goes beyond this five-year forecast. That's out into the future. That's a big, important piece of how we're getting to the stable financial condition, that we can be predictable and consistent. As noted on the slide and as Cecilia discussed, we also use the Rate Stabilization Fund to help get to that consistent, long-term, predictable rate increase strategy. I want to take a minute here in thinking about the long-term stability. The other primary tool that we use to get there is the use of our long-term debt and the debt planning we do. So what this slide shows you is the increase kind of in 2000 to around 2011 in debt issuance, outstanding bonds, and that's almost exclusively related to the $1 billion-plus big pipe project. That's what led to some large rate increases, as the commissioner and others have noted. As the debt service to pay off those bonds increased, rates also increased. We're now at a point where we're starting to pay off that big pipe debt, and we're only issuing, as you can see here, the lighter green, we're issuing debt at about the same amount as we're paying it off on average. And so you see that stability in the long-term debt. That really helps us have a strategy to stabilize rates, because we're not needing to increase rates specifically to address an increasing debt burden. The other thing that's happening here, as I think the commissioners noted during the budget discussions, is we're shifting over time away from funding the entire capital program with debt, or essentially the entire capital program with debt, to a mix, a better mix of cash and debt. So there's some intergenerational equity advantages there. And lastly, I would say from the combination of a improved rate increase profile, meaning lower projected rate increases and predictable rate increases, increases in cash balances, and the decrease or stability in the debt burden, put us on a path toward potential rating upgrades, which have obviously some other advantages in reducing costs of borrowing going forward. How do we compare with our peers? I would say good news here. We compare fairly favorably. A little less expensive in a couple of cities you see here, and a little more expensive in others. I would point out on this slide that 3 or 4 years ago, we would have been much higher on this list. In fact, we were about third or fourth among these comparison cities. And as we've been able to reduce our rate increases, we've been able to move down that list and be compare more favorably. I'd also note that because we're on a path to have sub 3% rate increases for the foreseeable future, that's our target anyway, we're likely to continue to see improvement in this over time as other peers are potentially facing larger annual rate increases for the next few. Going to the rate ordinance, I want to mention that the rate ordinance also does authorize changes to system development charges and connection fees. I won't go over this stuff in great detail, and I would reiterate what Director Stewart from the Water Bureau said. Our SDCs are backward-looking or reimbursement SDCs to pay for capacity that we've already built into the system to accommodate growth. You don't see a single percentage here on the SDCs. Our SDCs have two components, a sanitary component that's based on sort of a fixed EDU, equivalent dwelling unit assumption. That increases about 5.8%. The other component of our SDCs is the stormwater component. It's a much more variable application based upon some specific details of the development, but we gave you a couple examples to see the kind of range for some common developments. So the combined SDC increase for single-family residential, about 7.6%. For a larger office building, 11. Generally, the range, combined range, is between 6 and kind of 15-ish based upon the circumstance. The last slide I will cover is just quickly mentioning that we also have, in the rate ordinance, I think maybe about 5 of the 6 pages or 5 of the 7 pages are a big list of various review fees, particularly mostly building plan reviews and land use review fees. Most of these are charged on a cost recovery basis, meaning we come up with the charges based upon what it costs us to run the program. And happy to say that for the most part, those fees are stable and in some circumstances even decreasing to some degree. And covering it quickly, happy to address questions, but I'll hand it back to Director Jordan.
So I don't know if it's an honor or dubious distinction, but I get to talk about the last slide, which is the cumulative effect of both of our bureaus on the bill. And as you can see, at a typical single-family residential water and sewer and stormwater monthly bill, so this is the combined bill, currently is $103.63, and it would be moving, if approved, to $107.97. That's just under a 4.2% combined increase for the entire bill. And with that, I think we all are prepared to answer your questions.
Commissioner Fritz?
So how many of the customers have switched to the monthly billing rather than quarterly billing?
Oh, my goodness.
Over 20.
Over 20,000. I'm sorry, I didn't bring the number.
Well, I'm just wondering. It's a lot, but it's not everybody
yet. But
it's
not necessarily. It sounds like that might be a good thing, but if you're having trouble paying your bill, you might not want to be on monthly billing because you can't get the payments made within this 14-day cycle of the billing. So we work very carefully with customers, particularly in the low income, to help them choose the right thing. It's not intuitive that you would think monthly billing is always better, but it's not necessarily so.
Well, I know it's been one of the issues in the past that people see the one bill and think that that's for 1 month, and it's generally not.
Yeah. Well, as we said, if you got a quarterly bill from Comcast, you'd have a heart attack.
Yeah.
We offer it aggressively because there's other advantages. If someone signs up for a monthly bill, particularly e-bill, then we can have the ability to send them other communications on an ongoing basis. I think it's the mid-20s will get you the current number.
Yeah.
And Mayor Hales, for example, felt very strongly that if more people got a monthly bill, it would create a better narrative about the cost of utilities because they'd be comparing apples to apples.
Yeah. So as going forward each year, I'd like to know kind of that proportion just for interest's sake. I'm glad that it is offered now, which is a major achievement since you've been the commissioner.
So Mike's note to self is always bring Kathy Cook with me.
Right.
Commissioner Saltzman.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding right. The annual operating budget of the Water Bureau is roughly $145 million, and BES is roughly $364 million?
Roughly.
Okay. Yeah, I never realized there was quite that difference, almost $200 million.
They can talk about their bill, but when I look at the numbers, to me it's kind of intuitive. They have a huge amount of operating machinery that we don't have that is very expensive.
Right.
And any ditch they dig, you almost have to shore. So our pipes themselves cost about the same. Mm-hmm. But once they get beyond the curb, they're shoring, and I'm cruising along 5 feet deep and mostly not shoring. So what they have is much more expensive than what
I was.
So I
guess I just wanted to refer the council back to the pie chart slide. You can see there that our total proposed budget for the year, $493.5 million. And you can see the operating and overheads, basically, side of the budget is about $160 million. And those are, I would say, I don't know what numbers you're looking at, Commissioner, but those are imperfect segregations of the of the budget. We presented this slide to try and show people how much of our annual budget goes towards capital and debt service on capital. So.
Yeah, I'm looking at the impact statement that you filed and says the rate ordinance will generate $364 million in operating revenue.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Commissioner, I believe that the difference is that that number includes the debt service payment. So we're reflecting it on this slide as the capital cost, okay. But it's treated because that's an annual payment.
So the 364 includes
that? Includes the $179 million debt service.
Okay. And then I was speaking to some independent restaurant owners the other night and got hammered on the FATS oil and grease program, or FOG.
No, I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure. We do charge. The FATS oil and grease program applies to any commercial generator of food waste. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Generally. Okay. We obviously, that program hasn't been around forever. And so we have an awful lot of establishments that were around before the program was in place. So what normally happens is either A, they're doing something which triggers a permit, which allows us to talk to them about the kind of facility they need in their kitchen for fats, oil, and grease, or as we TV the lines, we find the evidence of one of those establishments that may be discharging a large amount of fat, oil, and grease, which allows us to go in and talk to them about they're impacting the system. And so then we may be talking about a retrofit or something like that regarding fats, oil, and grease. Okay. That's correct.
And finally, I just want to know, am I the last person in the world that still does a voluntary contribution to the Green Bucks program?
No. No, you're not the last person
in
the
see.
World.
Sonia's hand went up. To
No. We have a number of people who still are. I don't know the exact number. Maybe.
How much money is the voluntary program raised?
That's a great question, Commissioner, and it's a program we're looking at right now. I believe there's about $6,000 a year that we collect. I can share that we haven't dispersed that the past couple of years because we haven't had requests from the qualifying school districts to accept that money, and we're doing that outreach right now. This month with school districts to see if anyone is interested and then look at what do we do with that program.
Okay. Commissioner Daly.
I just want to be clear that the low income assistance program is only for the water portion of the bill. No, it's for the whole bill and it cuts it in half.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Yep. Okay.
Great. Commissioner
Mayor, I just want to follow up on a question that Dan asked. So I think, Dan, actually it was under your watch that we launched the FATS oil and grease program, the FOG program. Yeah. And the idea is that certain establishments were releasing things into the system that had a terrible impact. And so we were trying to do some treatment before it got into the pipes and clogged things up. Couple things we've done is that we've tried to reach out to more businesses to let them know what our discount and payment plans. We have discount programs and payment plans, so we're able to soften the impact. We're particularly obviously concerned about a big unanticipated cost to a business where historically the chances of survival in year one for a new restaurant are pretty low. So we will work with businesses to try to allow them to finance the cost. We're trying to make sure they understand more about discounts. And the third thing we've done is we've been doing outreach into some of the newer communities of our city, like the Asian restaurants out in on 82nd and the like, doing specific targeted presentations to people with translators so they understand the programs and the various benefits that we offer. Obviously, we can do better, but I think we're making some progress on that.
To piggyback,
you get hammered by the restaurant industry.
Yeah. To piggyback on your comment, Commissioner, we just finished production on, I believe it's six different language-oriented videos to go and make that presentation at different communities where language is a challenge. With some of these entrepreneurs, language is a challenge, and so we've produced some things to do that outreach and try to reach those communities.
Thank you.
So, Mayor, we have an invited panel.
Very good.
With Alan Warman, Pub Co-Chair, and Janice Thompson from the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, please come forward, and we've budgeted 5 minutes for each of them. Alan, why don't you start, and thank you for your service on the Portland Utility Board, and we appreciate the guidance you gave us during the budget process and your being here today to testify.